Hello and welcome to another episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. Stay tuned after the show to hear how you can get involved. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Good day, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to our podcast, CPA Review and More. And as you know, we scan the globe every week looking for people who are influential, all right, intelligent, and have a lot of good facts to share with you. And we located Ariana Campbell. Ariana lives in Charleston, South Carolina. Ariana is director, all right, we'll discuss what that is, and she is a black belt. You have your black belt in karate?
My black belt actually in Lean Six Sigma. My karate skills, not that good. But my
what is LSS black belt?
That stands for Lean Six Sigma, which is a process improvement methodology. And the black belt just indicates the level of certification that I have within that methodology.
So you've learned how to defend yourself in case, you know, you got involved in some type of thing that would end up on Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, right?
Well, makes for a pretty interesting story, but it actually is all centered around process improvement. No karate skills here, but definitely all about process improvement.
So what did you have to do to get that black belt? How do you get it?
Well, that's an interesting question. So I started off first with getting my Lean Six Sigma green belt. And that took a certain amount of hours that I had to complete as well as a project. And then I studied for my black belt, which was also an hours requirement and a little bit more of an in-depth project to show that I could facilitate the methodology.
What's the methodology?
So the Lean Six Sigma, I'm not sure. I know that a lot of people may have heard about Lean Six Sigma from a manufacturing context. That's where people typically say that they've heard of it, whether it be in manufacturing or learning it from school. But it's really a process improvement methodology that focuses on efficiency and consistency to help create more effective processes. Essentially, it's all about removing the wasteful activities or the things that don't add value, and making sure that we are aligning the processes that we're doing with what actually adds value from the client's point of view. And that's a really important part. Value is always determined by the client.
So it's a business designation. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. It's a business designation. And Lean Six Sigma, while it originated in manufacturing, it's being applied to professional services. You hear about it in healthcare as well, but CPA firms across the country are using it to really help find capacity to focus on the things that matter.
How many people have this designation, this black belt in LSS, which you stated? I mean, is this what's the exam like? I mean, do you have to take a written exam, or what do you have to do?
No, that's a great question. So as far as how many people have the designation across the country, I'm not sure. I know that within the profession, it's a little bit harder to come across people that have their Lean Six Sigma black belt. We've worked with quite a few CPAs who actually do have their green belt designation, but the test itself is it's a number. I took mine from the University of Georgia, but it involved a number of online study courses. We had some group work in online groups, and then we had to take intermediate tests. And then at the end, after we had completed, I believe it was over 200 hours, then we had to take a final exam and then complete a project.
Did this help you get your present position at Boomer Consulting?
It did. So it's a very important part of my role in Boomer Consulting and making sure that we are, you know, using that methodology in the correct way to help firms be more successful and future ready.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, actually, that black belt and that. I said, is she a karate expert? Or, you know, please share with us your education. Where'd you get your sociology degree?
So I got my my sociology degree from UW-Madison. And then I spent some time in advertising. Actually, I spent 5 years in advertising as an account manager. and transitioned to Boomer Consulting. And I started off as a receptionist or in an administrative position. Worked from there into a project manager role, and then eventually moved into a consulting role, and then from there into my current role as director.
How does someone with a sociology degree end up as a in the consulting field? I mean, what was your background to bring you? You said you had a marketing. You worked in advertising, correct?
Worked in advertising. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you do at, explain, I don't think I asked you, what do you do at Boomer Consulting exactly? And what is your relationship with accountants, CPAs at Boomer Consulting? And what do you do for them?
Sure. So at Boomer Consulting, we work exclusively with CPA firms, and we help them through a combination of communities, so peer groups, consulting, obviously, and training, and five areas that are critical to their success. So we help with process, obviously, that's the area that I primarily focus in. But also,
how do you define process, by the way?
How do we define process?
Layman's terms, what do you mean by process?
Any kind of workflows that are happening within the business, from your compliance processes to your operations processes. It's how the work flows through your business.
Okay.
So we help with process. We help with talent, so developing talent and helping to keep talent engaged, technology, leadership, and growth. And so with that, like I said, I focus primarily on process, and I go in and I help firms with consulting. So I help them to really get a good understanding of what's currently happening in their processes and then what they can do to make those processes more effective. And then I also help to develop emerging talent within firms as well through our leadership programs.
What type of firms come to you? It's CPA firms, correct?
Absolutely. Right?
And are they large, small, medium? Who needs your service? I guess a small firm would not. Am I correct?
Correct. We work with larger size firms, so anywhere from starting around about 50 FTE up to right outside of the big four. So we work with definitely larger size firms.
Without sharing the name of the firms, could you give us an example of why someone came to you, a specific example, why someone came to your company and what you did for them? Could you do that?
Absolutely. So just earlier this year, had a firm that came to us and they were really trying to figure out how they could make their 1040 process more efficient. And it was a larger size firm. They were also trying to figure out how, because they had multiple locations, that they could really move towards that one firm vision, because their current tax practice was more siloed. So we worked with them not only to evaluate the process and look at it beyond just efficiency, but also the consistency and the effectiveness, which involved also looking at how they could better leverage technology, how they could better leverage their resources of their people, and really all at the same time, as I said, work to move towards doing things in a one firm way instead of separate ways across locations. So we worked with them. They wanted to build a really effective plan. Their team did a tremendous job. The team that we worked with a team of about 20 people from the firm. They did a tremendous job. They put together a plan that they've rolled out, and they'll be implementing it going into this next busy season. And their goals are, again, to make the process more efficient, so to reduce turnaround time in their 1040 practice, to also provide more training and learning and development opportunities for their staff, to move towards that one firm vision, and of course, to increase the bottom line.
Starting at step one, all right, this firm prepares 1040s, individual tax returns, correct? Mm-hmm. And what was the problem they were experiencing that they came to you?
They felt like there was certainly an opportunity to see better realization on their overall 1040 business, but they're also really looking to streamline the process. They felt that there were steps and things that they were doing within that process that maybe didn't need to be done or could be doing, they could have been doing in a different way.
For example, can you give me an example? What did you streamline?
So when we think about the intake of client information comes in multiple different ways. It comes in piecemeal. Sometimes it drips in. So one part of what we did was we worked to streamline the front end of that process. Part of it was through client education and helping to communicate better with the clients on the front end, but it was also leveraging technology. In this case, the firm decided to go with TaxCaddy, which is technology.
Sorry, what was the name of that? What was that?
TaxCaddy.
What is that?
It is an electronic way for you to get organizer information from your clients. So it's not like an electronic PDF or a portal. It's actually an app that the clients that they subscribe to, and then they are able to submit their information that way. And there's a dashboard on the CPA side that also allows them to assess how much information has come in and to communicate with the client. And it makes it in a format that our clients are dealing with in their everyday life. They're not dealing with an electronic organizer or a portal or something like that. They're actually able to go to an app in their phone and interact with their CPA that way.
I know a lot of the clients, when I did tax returns, did not like to fill out organizers. And mm-hmm. you could send it to them, and they would still come in with their box of receipts and everything.
Yep.
They still do that. I don't know if they still do that.
They do still. They absolutely still do that.
So do you you educate the CPA firm on how to educate their clients?
Uh-huh.
For example, I mean, I would come to a CPA firm and say, all right, yeah, I don't like to fill out these organizers, and, you know, I'm paying you, and I really don't know what's taxable, deductible. Here's the box. Let's sit here for an hour or two and discuss this. And you tell me what's taxable and what's deductible. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fill out an organizer.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what most clients say. They don't want
all right.
to. Fill out.
So how are you going to get me to change the way I am as the client? All right.
You tell the CPA,
you know, they got to tell their client they must fill out the organizer. What do you do?
No. So the first thing that you have to do is help the client to understand what's in it for them and how you're adding value to them.
Okay.
And again, when we're using technologies that actually work with our clients' everyday lives instead of against, because we know when you get that however many page organizer and you put it down on your desk, there's no feelings that you have of, ooh, I can't wait to start filling that out. So client education comes into the whole fact of, you know, thinking about how you use your online banking app to get the information that you need there. You know, letting the client know that you don't have to bring in the papers the way that you have in the past, that you have this opportunity to utilize technology to actually upload your information. You can do it throughout the year. So helping to educate them on whatever tool you're using, whether it's TaxCaddy or another tool. Also letting them know within there's the functionality for linking. So it can pull the information from their accounts into that. And as you start to tell your clients about these different features that they're already familiar with, because you're comparing it to something like a mint.com or something like that, speaking in their language, it helps them to understand how this is so much easier for them. They don't have to keep track of the papers and the different things. And in some cases, you don't even need to bring the information in. Let's sit down and have a conversation after we finish the return so that we can talk about the insights from that. And we can help to free up some client time on the front end by making it easier for them to get the information to us. Really, you want to make it easier for them to do business with you.
But aren't you really saying to them still, go to your app and, you know, and get the information, from the bank. Is that what you're doing? Are you telling them to go still and get the information, but not bring in receipts?
So some of the information is automatically downloaded. And again, this gets into the part of the details that firm by firm, they determine what the best messaging is for their client. We help to provide guidance on how to make the process work well for them, as well as some tips or guidance around client education. But individually, the firms determine what their approach is going to be. But as far as using a tool like that, it's letting them know the ease of you just have to snap, you know, pictures of your receipts, the tool itself is going to help to make those connections with your bank, with your investment accounts, with things like that, so that you're not having to get that information and bring it in. It's really all talking about a perspective of client value and the use of technology, which has been very well received by clients because, again, it's more in line with what they're doing in their everyday lives.
How much resistance do the clients give the firm still? Is it completely cleared up, that resistance?
So there's always going to be resistance. We tell firms when we work with them that there shouldn't be an expectation of 100% buy-in internally or externally. In fact, that's what usually holds firms up from making progress, is that they want something that's either a perfect solution or a solution that's going to provide 100% buy-in. And that doesn't exist. And with the pace of change, we don't have the time to wait for perfect solutions. We need to focus on continuous improvement. But as far as the resistance part of it, in some cases, it depends on the client base. We hear from people if they have a more elderly client base or a more ag-based client base, that there are other things that they explore as far as a tool. But you'd actually be surprised at how many people are open and actually excited about using technology. I mean, think about just the demographics and the adoption of technology across the board, the demographics of people who are on Facebook, who have smartphones, things like that. So in lots of cases, you find that it's something that the clients have been waiting for.
Did you say the clients they have who are elderly, you know, they like the technology? Or would they prefer to go back to the other way?
Some are very excited about the technology because, again, they have smartphones and they're on Facebook interacting with family members and things like that. So we try to encourage firms not to make assumptions based on their client demographics, but to truly give them an opportunity to, try the tool. And obviously, if we know that that we have a client who doesn't have a smartphone, and we've talked to Mr. Smith, and we know we've been working with him for years, obviously we still want to service him well and not force the technology on him, but we don't want to make assumptions, just general assumptions across any kind of demographic.
If a client does not agree to anything that you recommend, and they're totally resistant to everything, in other words, why should I do anything if I'm paying you, the CPA, all right? Do you recommend to your client to maybe sever relationship with that client?
The answer is it depends. First, you want to find out the why of why they're resistant. I mean, I would never recommend a knee-jerk reaction of firing a client based on their resistance. Sometimes they need more education or understanding or even training on how to use something or understanding it. And it's hard to say, what the rest of their relationship might be like with the firm. It might not make sense to fire them, but look at them as more of an exception. But what we do talk about is that overall, if your client base is resistant to technology as a whole, if that's really true, then you need to be thinking about how that's going to impact your firm for the future. Because if it's really true that your client base isn't on board with using technology, they don't want to try new things, they like paper, then that's really going to be putting your firm at risk for growth in the future if they're not willing to get on board. Because technology is, it's not even of the future, it's of the now.
Do you educate the CPA firms about this, and then the CPAs educate their clients, or do you come into the firms and actually bring in the clients and educate the clients directly? Who educates who on this?
No, that's a great question. So we at Boomer Consulting, not just me alone, but we work to help educate CPA firms and partner with them to find solutions for their clients. And then they take the lead on the client education. One of the great things that I love about Boomer is that it's not only us that helps to provide the education, but with our peer groups and peer communities, they can find out what their peers who are in similar situations have done to help successfully navigate, whether it be client education, the technology implementation, talent issues within their firm. So we really see it as being collaborative with working with us and working with their peers to find the best solutions.
Is your sociology degree help because of having to do with relationships? How do you use your sociology degree in what you do?
So I think that the sociology piece does come into it from understanding groups and people and things like that. But really, the most important part of my job is understanding relationships and understanding people. The biggest part of my job is working with change leadership and helping firms navigate pretty significant change initiatives in their firms, changes that impact their business models. And so with that, you have to understand the people part of it, understand the people side of change. So in addition to the process, helping CPAs get into understanding how the emotional impact of change, both internally and externally, can either speed up or slow down. That's something we don't talk a lot about within the profession. So blending that in with those other conversations helps to make them more successful. And I'd say that's a combination of my degree, but also just experience and then learning from my peers at Boomer.
Do you need an advertising background to do what you do?
No, you don't need an advertising background. I think the way that it's helped me was really the client and the account management piece of it. I think there's certainly an importance to marketing and branding within firms. That's another area that we do help firms with. We have a community that's centered around marketing and business development, because as firms are becoming more advisory and consultative, they have to make sure that they are able to market themselves and give a clear message. But for me, it's the advertising background really helped with the client management. But also, you have to know how to market and brand yourself and market your company. I mean, everything that you do is either, building your reputation or doing the opposite. So I think that that was helpful in understanding that as well, and also pressure. So it was a high pressure experience during my advertising career. So being able to navigate those kind of situations was beneficial as well.
What happens about a degree in psychology? Would that be compared to sociology, or do they hire people with degrees in psychology?
I would say as far as what degrees, they're looking for, there's not a specific category to come into consulting. I think that a degree in psychology would definitely be advantageous to understand, the people dynamics, because that's becoming more and more important in the profession. But again, from a consultant background, you can learn from so many life experiences and apply those both, professional and personal, to being more consultative. And that's what we're finding that firms are having to do as well. They don't have backgrounds in sociology or psychology or even in advertising, but they're having to become more consultative. They're having to become marketers. They're having to change and transform, into different roles without having those backgrounds.
Is the main source of revenue that's now coming into the bigger firms, is it more in advisory services versus the audit? Are you familiar with that at all? Can you give us some idea?
So I'd say that the majority of the revenue is still coming in from compliance work, but that is shifting, especially for firms who are really being intentional about building their advisory and consultative services. And there are firms who are certainly have made a good amount of progress with that. But on the whole, I mean, even when you read the different publications, whether it be Accounting Today or things like that, the majority of the revenue is still coming from compliance work.
But it's, as you say, it's shifting to advisory services.
It is.
I would think at some point, advisory services will actually account for a greater portion of audits.
They will for both audits and tax. I mean, when you look at the way that technology is impacting the profession, that compliance work isn't going to go away. The way that the work is being done is going to change, and it's going to be more, there's going to be more of a focus of the insights that are gathered from that compliance work that can then be applied to those advisory or consulting services.
Are a lot of the accounting firms talking about maybe changing what the CPA should be in? For example, CPA is considered now a license to do audits. That's really it. All right. Now, is that come up at all? Is anybody talking in your companies that maybe it's time to change what the CPA really is? Maybe you should be licensed to be an advisory CPA versus one who does audits. Do you ever hear anything about that in the firms?
So there's certainly conversation around that, and I know there's obviously a conversation around the AICPA asking some of those same questions. But the biggest conversation that we're hearing within firms is what roles do they need to be hiring besides the CPA designation? Should CPA be the only expectation? And what we're seeing is an increase in roles in project management, in change management, in data analytics, and business analysts. So there are certainly new roles that are coming into the firms to help to manage these changing dynamics and to be integral parts where they're not just off in the sides in the operations, but they're truly leaders within the firms. But it's trying to understand what do their paths look like? What do people need? What roles do people need within the firms? So that's the conversation that we're hearing people focus a lot on, while still hearing, you know, conversation around what's going to be happening with the designation. I think the bigger focus is on what roles should we be planning for in our firms now.
What other designations do these people have besides the CPA if they're in advisory work or anything like that? Is there different certifications for that area?
So the CPA, to your point, there may be less of a need for it going into the future, but you're still going to need that CPA designation. It's not obviously going to go away. It may change. It may morph. But the other...
Why would you still need that CPA designation if it's a license to do public accounting, you know, audits?
Because I think that the designation will still hold value even if the work changes. So... because it's been such a long-standing certification, I don't see it just going away. The public finds so much value in that, and it's still strongly viewed as trusted advisor, one of the most respected professions. So I don't see that going away. I see it changing. But then I also see other designations being added, project management, so people with their PMPs, I see that an increase in a need for that, and actually having people who are trained in project management instead of just telling them to go and manage a project. Business analysts, as I said earlier, that's an important role, and there could be a couple of different designations there. I think that you are going to see more of Lean Six Sigma designations. We have helped to certify a couple hundred CPAs, if not more, and not all having CPA roles. Actually, some are CPAs, some are not, to help them get that designation. So I think there are going to be a number of different designations, maybe some that we haven't even really explored yet, that will become more important.
Do you deal with any CMAs? Are they hiring CMAs? You know what that is, don't you?
So I personally haven't seen as many with the CMA designation, not because I don't think that there's an interest in that, just I personally haven't seen as much of an increase in that role. But I mean, we are seeing things like chief innovation officers and that being a role to focus specifically on innovation. I was talking to a person a couple weeks ago that's the director of change management. So her whole job is to help the firm with all things related to change. So there are some interesting new roles being created.
I don't know if you're aware of this. Over the past 10 years, there's been a 50% decline in the number of people taking the CPA exam.
Yes.
Do you know why that's the case? Have you heard why that's the case?
Tell me why that's the case.
Okay. Well, this is my opinion. Okay. My opinion is when I took the exam, the CPA was a certification. All right. Was not a license, all right? I took the exam. If I passed the CPA, it showed I had a pretty good knowledge of accounting in general, and they gave me my CPA certification, you know, Phil Yeager, Certified Public Accountant. Now, I had a choice there. If I wanted to go into public accounting, I'd have to get a certain amount of experience to get a license. The license had nothing to do with the CPA certificate, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, if I didn't want to actually go into public accounting and I wanted to go directly into corporate accounting, all right, I was fine. I was a certified public accountant. Mm-hmm. But now, all right, I don't know how many years ago this happened, but they decided a CPA is not a certification. It's a license, okay? And it's a license to practice public accounting. which makes the experience requirement getting more and more difficult, which means that basically, if you want to get that license, you have to work in a CPA firm or under a CPA for a period of time. Now, what you're doing is you're forcing people to work in public accounting or under a CPA. So, you know, if I decided, hey, I took the CPA exam and I pass it, yeah, I have the CPA, but they're not going to give me my plaque that says I'm a certified public accountant because I have to get my experience requirement. Now, what happens if I want to go into the federal government? All right. A lot of times in the federal government, all right, there are no CPAs to work under to, you know, say, hey, this is what you're doing, and that work would qualify. And most of the states now have gone to that. We have to work under a CPA or work in an accounting firm. You know what the problem is with the CPA? They're dealing with several different, you know, the boards of accountancy, NASBA, National Association of State Boards. There's so many different, too many cooks. That's the whole thing. And I don't know if they're recognizing it because I don't want this designation to become a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, that's why I'm curious. You know, you're saying that a lot of the firms, CPA firms, they will have non-CPAs doing the work that the CPA firms used to do, CPAs used to do. So, you know, where is this designation going?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love your passion around this topic. As I said earlier, I personally don't think that the CPA designation is going to go away. I think, like I said, you're going to see other roles helping to work in and to support CPA firms as they move towards being more advisory and consultative. In fact, I continue to, in our leadership classes where I do get the opportunity to work with the emerging leaders, there are still people who are, you know, committed to and working through sitting for the CPA exam that is celebrated. There are still some firms who do use that as a requirement for growth within the firm, that to get to a certain level, you have to have your CPA. So there's still very much a push towards encouraging people to get that designation within firms. So I don't think that that's gone by the wayside. And I see people who are taking advantage of that and who have passion around it. But I do think that the most important piece is not necessarily how people in different roles are going to replace the CPA, but how they're going to help and support within the firm the overall direction of, you know, transformation.
Are your clients only CPA firms?
We work exclusively with CPA firms.
Okay. All right.
We've been doing so for the past 25 years.
Well, I guess you don't have, do you have contact with the employees at the firms in any way?
Absolutely. We work with them through leadership development, through our process improvement projects. Absolutely.
And no one complains that if they pass or they're studying for the exam, they're working so hard. CPA firms, you know, have busy seasons, all right? Where did they find the time to study for the exam? I mean, do the firms really want them to pass the exam? Because if they pass the exam and they get their experience, you know, they'll go on to something else that maybe has some type of they can live their life normally, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I was speaking to a young lady just this past week. We were at a conference together, and she is getting ready to sit for the last section. And I was talking to her because she has two kids. She's obviously working full time in the firm, so she's trying to balance a lot of things. She just became a manager. And so I asked her that same question. How are you finding the time to fit it all in? Obviously, you're wearing your superwoman cape, but where do you find the time? And she said that the firm does allow her time for studying, so she gets a lot of time during her work week for studying. But then she said that she also uses her weekends to do that as well. She sets aside time, you know, for family and activities and things, but then time for studying. But that she also knows that it's for a season. So her whole life isn't going to be like this. And yes, it is a lot of work, but that it is worth it. And so it is for her, it's worth that commitment and the sacrifice for that season.
There's a tremendous turnover in these big four firms. I mean,
yeah,
the first year, I think something like 50% at least.
Yeah.
You don't deal with the firms on how to keep the turnover low, do you?
I think that indirectly gets addressed through the different, you know, initiatives and area that we work with them on. Obviously, that's a key goal for an accounting firm is you want to reduce that turnover and keep your employees engaged. That falls under the talent, you know, the talent area that we work with firms on. But it's an underlying, you know, message that we need to be working on just across the board. Technology helps to keep people engaged. Process helps to keep people engaged. Good leadership helps to keep people engaged and reduce your turnover.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you, you were actually, for 2019, you were considered what, an influencer between the age of 20 and under 40? Did I get that right?
Yes, yeah, so CPA Practice Advisor, 20 under 40, superstars.
You were a superstar. Are you still a superstar?
I think I still have my superstardom.
You still have that?
For sure.
Yeah. You weren't on that show. You probably never heard of it. Star Search? No.
Do remember Star Search. I used to love watching Star Search. Oh, I was never on Star Search. Were you?
Yeah, of course. I did. It was a different type of thing I did. You know, most people dance, sing. I actually took off a trial balance and created a balance sheet and financial statement.
What? I missed that episode.
Well, I think everyone missed that episode.
You have to send it to me.
Yeah, I have to. Unfortunately, it was on VHS tape, and you know, it's really not in good shape. But you have a good sense of humor. But anyway, tell us. Are you an influencer? Is that what they call them?
An influencer, yeah, influencer. Or
what is this award you got? Why did you get this award? Was it best actor, best actress, best cinematographer? Why did you get this award?
It was not best actor or best actress, but it was, and it's truly an honor to be able to work with firms and help support them in helping to move forward with process improvement, process effectiveness initiatives that are making a significant impact in their firm. And that's what the award category was centered around, was those myself and the other 19 people who were identified as truly being impactful and working with firms to help them make progress.
How did your name get into this group to possibly be picked? Were you nominated by someone?
I was nominated.
May I ask you who nominated you?
So I didn't have the list of nominations, but I believe my peers nominated me to, you know, and submitted that application and that information to CPA Practice Advisors, so my peers at Boomer. And I know that our marketing manager works to help, you know, get those nominations and to make sure that our voices are included where appropriate.
And as a result of getting this award, what do you do? If you want to get the award again next year, what do you do once you get the award? You said it's not for influencing, or it is?
So definitely having an influence within the profession is a significant
part. And that is, what do you do as far as, besides your job, what else, is your job considering the influencing, or is it outside of your job?
So I would say there are a couple different avenues. So my job is certainly a part of it, being able to go into firms and help them transform the way that they're doing their work, you know, really focusing on, again, the process side, but also the technology and the people side, and making an impact that makes a difference to their business and to their bottom line. There's obviously an influential piece there. I also write, so as far as being published in different publications, our internal publication, the Boomer Bulletin, I do a monthly article in CPA Practice Advisor that is all centered around process improvement, republications in State Society, magazines.
And with all the extra time you have on your hands, and if I might say this from a personal nature, she's also the mother of three young children, that's a full-time job unto itself.
That is a full-time job. It's fantastic that I have the great teammate in my husband. Teamwork definitely makes that dream work. But yes, three kiddos. So we have our girls, their 9-year-old identical twins, and then our son Wesley is 5.
That sounds terrific. Would you say, if you feel your life is well-balanced, as far as your family, your career, are you as well-balanced as you'd like to be, or more well-balanced?
I would say that the most important part, I would say yes, but the reason why I can say yes is that I had to define what well-balanced looks like for me and what success looks like for me and my family. And what I define as well-balanced may not be what someone else defines as well-balanced. And I find that well-balanced is more a bigger picture perspective. There are some days where work wins. There are some days where my family wins. But overall, in the bigger picture, as long as I am living to my own personal definition of success, that's what makes a difference. And the biggest way that I define success is, how am I adding value to others? How am I adding value to my family? How am I adding value to Boomer Consulting? How am I adding value to our clients?
Very well put. That was very well put. I really like that. Well, good luck with your career, and I'm going to wish you a terrific and happy holiday season.
I wish you a very happy holiday season as well. And thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to be part of the podcast. And thank you for all that you do within the profession as well.
Thank you so much. That's very kind of you. And I only hope every time I do this, I have a really super nice person like you on. So I would rate you as a super nice person. You really are.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Stay well and good health to you and your family.
Thanks so much for listening to the CPA Review and More. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.